Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I am your host this week, Shane Lees, and joining me, I've got Harry Philby.
Hey.
Yes, that's right. We're back at the Dynamic Duo again, despite the enthusiasm there of Harry.
Mo Salah, who gets in on the act. It's surely Liverpool's day now.
Barnes. Oh, that's spectacular!
Eriksen tries again. Oh, that's phenomenal! Absolutely phenomenal!
Manchester City champions! And it's been decided in their favour.
We are going to start off with the news. Probably the biggest thing that's happened in the last week or so, and it kind of shows that it's been a bit of a slow time for football, for things happening generally, is David Beckham is investing in Salford as well. He's bought a 10% stake, which I think means now it's 60-40 to the class of 92 and Peter Lim, so they have the majority ownership between a lot of them now. The one thing I got to wonder, though, is it really kind of fair?
What, for a load of millionaires to be buying up a young, small football club? Or a load of professional footballers to... Is the argument that the unfair... Because obviously millionaires buy up a load of football clubs all the time, but is the argument that because they're a bunch of legends, they have a bit of extra pulling power?
It's not just that it's a whole bunch of people buying up into football club, because that happens all the time. That's just pretty much luck, whoever decides to get picked. But by being a whole bunch of legendary players, they've got a natural sort of network and pull, a bit like Wolves with George Mendes and all of that lot. But also the media. I mean, let's face it, there hasn't, what other non-league club has got as much attention as Salford since this has all happened? And that gives so much of a natural advantage over all the other clubs. I mean, at the end of the day, if your club gets bought up by some people who've got a lot of money and connections, you're not really going to complain too much about it. But at the same time, it's a little bit like I was looking up some stats the other week, and it was about major European leagues, so, you know, England, France, Spain, Italy. And I've found out that there hasn't been a single year in about the last 20 years, with the only exception being the likes of Leicester, where it isn't the richest clubs, one of the top two or three richest clubs who have won the league. And, of course, Salford are now one of the richest clubs down in the lower leagues, and they've been on a pretty clear upward curve. It would just be kind of nice to sort of... If it was someone else who didn't just have all the money and connections. I mean, we do like to pretend this is still a sport and not just, we paid to see who gets the biggest trophy at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, but then again, there's very little that we could really do to stop them, because you've got to let that be a possibility that clubs can get bought and rise. You know, it's pretty much inevitable that's going to happen. But I do kind of agree with you that if that had been like a championship club that had been bought by, like, it kind of reminds me the sort of bigger scale of it was Wolves, when they got bought and like hijacked by Mendes, and Mendes can just sign players that no other club in the division could possibly imagine getting, like when they were in the Championship, and even in the Prem now, they can sign players that bottom 10 clubs wouldn't have a chance with.
Who's that midfielder?
Matinho, and Neves was the main one in the Championship. And
Neves is already Champions League quality.
He pretty much was when they signed him in the Championship. That was probably the signing of the year, and it was in the Championship. And like, It's one of those things. It's difficult to really, like, there's very little you can do about it, and it depends how quickly they rise up the rest of the league. Because if they demolish the conference and everything, it's like, okay, that's a bit, it's not great. But if they then go and do it to League Two, League One, Championship, and you know, all of that, it just has a little bit of, I imagine they would become quite a hated club.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones, as you say, there's nothing that we can really do to solve it, because once you want any club in football to be able to rise up and become a big club, to do well, you want them all to be able to do that. At the same time, you don't want to create rules that mean that every club essentially sticks where it is, and that was one of the problems with financial fair play, was the opposite side of it was that you just kind of preserve the existing structures. Mm-hmm. And the issue is the money's already in football, and it's already top-heavy. You can't really adjust this now, other than making some pretty extreme legislation that puts everyone on a level playing field in terms of spending. So you say the top club can only spend the equivalent revenue of the bottom club or something like that. And at that point, the money does start to fly out of football, because why would the businessmen even invest in these clubs? What would be the incentive for them? Because of course they're in it for money. I mean, it would probably mean Newcastle were even more screwed than they currently are. Yeah. And let's face it, if we're on the course of revolution, I think most people are worried about Brexit and not football not, currently.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Does this mean anything for Beckham's involvement with Inter Miami as well?
Or you can own more than one club so long as so long as they aren't ever going to compete.
Yeah,
so the only
way
they could ever compete is if Salford and Inter Miami ended up in the Club World Cup.
Yeah.
But I think it's generally seen as these things are so unlikely to happen, let's not even worry about it.
Yeah,
also, the Club World Cup anyway, no one cares.
Yeah, because Tony Bloom actually owns a second... Brighton's chairman actually owns a second division Belgian side as of last year. And like, yeah, I know that sort of thing's okay. But to be honest, I imagine Beckham's probably not that involved in the running of it anyway. I imagine... I don't know if Salford FC have a chairman. What was it? Peter Lim, you said, was the businessman who owns it. I don't know if they... I don't know if... I imagine that he runs a lot of the like business end of it, because I can't imagine that Nicky Butt or Phil Neville are particularly switched on in that department. But, you know, you can imagine they have good input on the footballing side, but probably not on the business side. So, so I guess at the end of that, it's still run by a businessman. But I guess if he's less of a shareholder now, he's not he will still be the number one holder, won't he? He still holds 40% of it or something like that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
If there's six of them out, okay. So you imagine he still has only needs to get a couple of the others on this side if there's a big decision to be made, and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But it's to be honest, it's pretty boring until something really controversial happens. That'd be fun.
I mean, call me an old school footballing romantic. I like the idea of a club rising up on its own merits of footballing beauty, managers, you know, fantastic performances, players, all of that kind of lot. You know, the old school championship manager style thing of turning Accrington Stanley into European title winners purely by selling young players to PSG for 45 million at a time.
Yeah.
But it's the real world and doesn't really happen. And to do that, you still need the PSGs of this world.
And 45 million isn't a lot these days for a footballer.
Yeah. I mean, I've lost count of the amount of times on Football Manager I've just sold players, really average players, to China and PSG.
Oh,
I love those clubs now. I love them. They just give me the entire budget. It's fine.
It's genuinely the best thing that's happened since since China started investing a load of money in football. That's the best thing, is that Football Manager, you can now just sell players to them for millions and millions of pounds. It's amazing. That's the only good thing about it.
In less happy news, though, of course, I imagine everyone here has heard about this. It's unfortunately Cardiff City striker, recently transferred from Nantes, Emiliano Sala, has unfortunately gone missing on a flight from France to Cardiff. This was past the Channel Islands, past Jersey, I believe it was. And it's very sad that he's gone missing. I think they've recently come out and said that the likelihood of it ever actually being found is pretty slim. It's a recovery operation now, not a rescue, which means that they're looking for debris or bodies in that instance. It's a horrible, horrible situation. I've seen some people making jokes about this, and I do personally think that's just kind of unacceptable. You wouldn't do it in any other situation. You know, people have lost family members. You can put the football stuff aside. It's a horrible, horrible situation. It's something no one else wishes ever to happen. And especially in this year where we've had things like what's happened with Leicester, the helicopter crash, it's just always bringing back the human side of football into perspective. I suppose everyone's got their thoughts and hoping that things can have a happy ending. But if not, let's just hope something like this can be prevented in the future.
Yeah, I think that's all we really needs to be said about it. It's just insane to have two major freak football catastrophes within a year, though. It's normally, you know, players do die of heart conditions and die in training and all these kind of things, but what's just so sad about it is reading about it, there's a photo of him and his Nantes teammates about hours before he got on the plane, and because he was in Cardiff, went back to Nantes to say goodbye to all his players, move all his stuff and all this kind of thing, and then flew back, planning to fly back over to Cardiff. And it's insane to just have, it's such a freak accident. And, you know, there's very little that can be said about it that hasn't already been said, really. It is just horrible.
Yeah, and every account was, but this, he was a very nice guy. And of course, the pilot as well will be in the same situation. His family, of course, got to look out for that as well. But yeah, thoughts from everyone. And yeah, here's hoping that at the very least, things like this could make sure that they are prevented from happening. I think that's the only real ever silver lines you can get it. Same with the helicopter crash, where they were looking at that and seeing, making sure things like that cannot happen again in the future. All right, though, we're going to move on now to slightly more uplifting news, and that's about transfers. We're going to have a little bit of a talk about the transfers. And the biggest thing that looks like happening in this transfer window so far is Gonzalo Higuain is going to be moving to Chelsea. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Harry, but this is going to be a loan move with a move to buy at the end of the season if it all works out. And it's one of those ones I look at it and my first thought is Falcao. This could just so easily turn into another Falcao, a striker who was great on the continent, but suddenly you put him in the Premier League and it's not going to work out at all. On the other hand, you look at his record, it's only in the last year or so his record's really fallen off. And before that, he was the most prolific striker, arguably the most prolific out-and-out striker in Europe. Yeah. So it's one of his ones, on the one hand, Chelsea could have completely solved their striker crisis in Stum style. On the other hand, I can't help but feel like everyone's looking at this and just going, oh, what's the big deal? It's not really going to work out. I almost feel like everybody's assuming it's not going to work out because it's huge news, really.
Well, it's one of those really interesting ones because basically I think it's likely the six-month loan would probably stay that even if he did well. I don't see Chelsea as the kind of club that would invest a load of money in a 32-year-old or whatever he'd be by the point it would be in the summer. That would be a bit strange to me. But for signing him for 6 months for them to try and guarantee themselves a Champions League place, to me, makes perfect sense. Like that is Sarri, obviously, having worked with him before, he had a ridiculous season at Napoli with him. I think it was that one where he scored like 32 goals or something ridiculous like that. And so, and he has had a reputation for coming back from training overweight and these things. So he's maybe not got exactly the right attitude, but Sarri's obviously worked with him, so he doesn't see that as a problem. But it will be interesting. The more interesting thing is where that puts Morata for me.
It's looking like he's going to be leaving to Atletico Madrid. Again, it's looking like possibly being alone with a look towards doing the transfer at the end of the season. Of course, that'd actually be quite a big deal because Morata, of course, is a Real Madrid player going to Atletico. It's not the most well-trodden path. It's a bit more trodden than, say, Liverpool to United or something like that. Yeah. But that's a bit of a controversial one.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I know it's been about, a year and a half since Morata joined Chelsea, something like that?
Yeah, it was last summer.
I almost still feel like it's too soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
To say he's a failed striker.
Yeah, I still think he's a brilliant player. I think if he went to Atletico, he'd score 25 goals a season. I'm almost certain of that.
It is one of those ones where you just know he's going to be absolutely fine for the rest of his career. And you can't ever really work out why it didn't work out in the Premier League because he is exactly the sort of player who should have thrived.
Yeah.
And the thing I find funny is I reckon he signs for 2/3 of the other big Premier League clubs and I reckon it all works out fine.
Yeah.
I reckon if he had gone to United instead of Lukaku had gone to Chelsea, I reckon both clubs would have solved their striker problem. But ironically, neither of them did.
Yeah. It's really interesting that because Morata's best trait, and people will laugh at this because it's not what he's known for now. It's the opposite. He was a finisher. He's an out-and-out finisher. And that's the only thing that's been missing from his game. He has been getting chances. It's just he hasn't been finishing them for Chelsea. And it's interesting that they've replaced him with exactly the same player, which is Higuain, who is basically just a finisher as well. And it's one of those things where it's like, if it is what it's been true about Morata, that it's a confidence thing is the reason why he's not finishing and not any sort of physical problem or, you know, attitude problem or anything like that. It doesn't seem like it, you know. Yeah, yeah. And if it's not any of that, then it's interesting that they're just like, oh, we'll just replace him with the same player, essentially. Like, obviously, they've got their differences, but, you know, it's strange that I didn't expect it, the Morata thing, to go this way because for the first half of last season, he was ridiculous. He was insanely good for a long time and then he just completely fell off a cliff.
He had a Torres moment. He missed a big chance. Then all of a sudden, it just all implodes. What I find a little bit ironic about this is Chelsea signed, I'm pretty sure it's Giroud they signed first. Big striker, proper target man style poacher.
Yeah.
And then they sign Morata, very, very similar player. And now they're signing Higuain, very, very similar player. If I was in charge of transfers at Chelsea, I'd think to myself, right, that's clearly not worked twice. Let's not give it a go a third time. Maybe what we should do is try and play something like a false nine system where we've got Hazard or someone like that up front. We've got Pulisic who we've just signed. We've got Callum Hudson-Odoi and Willian and Pedro and all of these players who can play on the wings. We're so much talent to do this formation. But it's never like they've properly committed to one thing or the other. And now they're signing Higuain. Again, it could be an absolutely outstanding transfer. But it's got feelings of Falcao for me.
Sarri, the striker Sarri had at Napoli, who was the most successful, was Mertens. And Mertens was such a unique mold of striker that he essentially was that false nine. He was creating as well as scoring and all that kind of thing. And I can't really see a player out there like that that Chelsea could sign. And he has had other players that have played under him, like Milik was one of his signings, and that kind of thing. So he has shown that he can have different strikers, but they have been trying the Hazard at sort of that false nine kind of thing, and it hasn't really been working. They've sort of only done it because they've had to. I wouldn't really think the long-term goal was to have Hazard there anyway, even though I think there's a good chance he'll leave in the summer.
Part of this merry-go-round is Genoa striker Christoph Piatek has joined AC Milan, who of course have lost the lone striker of Higuain. He's gone there for £30 million. He scored 19 goals in 21 games for Genoa. I think it's kind of proof that the transfer market is inflated for everyone. In case we were wondering, yeah, just being the Premier League. But also, of course, we might have Callum Hudson-Odoi leaving out to go and join Bayern Munich, which is largely because Christian Pulisic has joined Chelsea from Borussia Dortmund, but's gone back out on loan to Borussia Dortmund. It does make you wonder sometimes, as a small club fan, we are a small club, It does make me wonder why these big clubs don't just be a little bit more patient, because they're basically signing and selling the exact same players who have different names to each other, but it's somehow a better fit. And come on, how often does it actually work out? Seriously, what's the success rate for transfers for big clubs? I reckon it's got to be something like 20%.
I'd love to know net profit on transfers for the top clubs. It's probably out there somewhere, but like, because Liverpool are doing it really well, because they sold Coutinho, like, and they sold Suarez, and they made a huge amount of money on both of them, and then they get freedom to spend all the money on Van Dijk. But Chelsea, like, the value they've lost out of Lukaku, De Bruyne, and Salah alone is insane. And then you look at ones like this with Morata. There's loads of players who you'd think should work out at other clubs, and most of them have. Like, I still think Morata will go on and score goals in Atletico. Obviously, Lukaku, De Bruyne, Salah are all doing really well. Like, United obviously have signed a load, but I think they're an exceptional circumstance because that club is melting down. But, you know, we'll talk about that a bit later. But yeah, it's interesting. That they seem to get it wrong so often. And
Well, yeah. I'll tell you what, there's a great one here. And this is another transfer that's happened this season. It's happened, I think it was the 2nd of January or something like that. And honestly, this stuff, I find it fantastic. So does everyone remember Paulinho? Paulinho, yeah, player who played for Spurs. He went to Spurs for something like 10 million, and then he transferred out from Spurs for around the same amount of money.
I think it was more than that. I think they signed him for 25 million.
It was 10, so. Yeah, it was 10, 20 million, something like that. And then they transferred him to Guangzhou Evergrande, Chinese club. And that was for like about around half of what they paid. I remember that not. Then he went from Guangzhou to Barcelona for about 36 million. And then he went from Barcelona to Guangzhou on loan. From Guangzhou, he then was sent back to Barcelona for a little bit. And now he's gone from Barcelona to Guangzhou for 37 million. And I'm sorry, whoever is Paulinho's agent is a genius.
He's making a million.
To do Brexit. Yeah. Seriously.
What a bloke. Yeah. I mean, so, yeah.
One of the biggest transfers of January. It's £37 million pounds for him to go out to China again.
For a what? 31-year-old is he now? 30. He's 30.
He's something like that. What a joke.
And the thing is I always absolutely loved Paulinho. I always thought he was amazing when I remember watching him for Brazil thinking, oh God, somebody should sign him. And then Tottenham signed him. And I was like, oh, he's going to be sick. And he was shit. And then he was actually, I was quite surprised when Barcelona sold him, because at the start of the season, he was quite good. I don't know what happened the second half of the season, but I remember watching him thinking he was playing really well and Barca fans seemed to like him, but nope, apparently not. Yeah.
Other major transfers, and most of the big transfers that have happened have not actually happened in the Premier League so far. So other big ones, we've got Lucas Paqueta, and that's probably going to be, if you're a fan of video games, you're going to know that name more than if you're actually a fan of real football. Apparently he's a very big, young Brazilian talent. He's joined AC Milan, £31 million straight from Brazil. That's an expensive transfer. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that one goes. I almost would really love it if AC Milan could actually put together a properly good team again. Because you remember what their old team was like. It was legendary. It was those players, all of them were legends. Yeah, so it'd be nice to see them actually put it all together again.
Yeah, it was back when Italy was like an amazing league to watch. It had like Kaká and everyone that. Yeah,
before corruption destroyed it.
And like the best defenders in the world, where it had like Maldini and Zanetti and stuff like that. Used to be so good.
other news, Balotelli, he's on the move again. He has joined Marseille from Nice on a free transfer. Again, he's one of those players I always thought got a bit of a tough rap, because at the end of the day, you actually look at his stats and he's pretty much performed wherever he's gone. It's only, what was it, time at Liverpool where it didn't really work out. But he's apart from still that, one of City, the best... you look at his goal scoring stats for City, it's actually brilliant.
Yeah, he's still one of the best natural goal scorers in the world, whether people like to hear that or not. Like, he is obviously he's got a load of baggage with him, but the problem with Balotelli is I will ultimately look back on his career, unless something radically changes in the next 2 or 3 years, and see it as just so much wasted talent. Like,
he could have been one of the best.
He could have literally been the best striker in the world. I'm so sure of that based on what he had as his goal scoring ability. He's just an absolute freak, but it doesn't look like it will work out, but I'm sure he'll score a few goals for Marseille. Like,
yeah, other news, we've got Cesc Fabregas has left Chelsea. He's left the Premier League. He's been here for a very long time now. It's quite sad, but kind of, I think it was his time. Also shows that Chelsea are absolute hypocrites when it comes to their above 30-year-old trying to sign Higuain and then shifting Fabregas off to Monaco. Apparently, it's looking like it could have been a transfer for around £20 million. So if that is the case, I think Chelsea have actually done bloody well there, because Fabregas is one of those players, we all know it, he's going to retire young. He's got 2 or 3 years left in him at most. He just doesn't have the legs and the stamina for it. But other major transfers, and we're sort of going more into the English ones now. Dembele leaving.
Just quickly, do you know a good fact about Fabregas? He's the youngest ever Premier League goal scorer.
I thought that was that guy who played for Everton.
Tom Davies. Oh, no, youngest foreign Premier League goal scorer. Sorry.
Right, there we go. Good fact. Right. Yeah. you should really keep those in mind when we do quizzes, Harry.
Yeah.
Dominic Solanke is again proving how inflated the transfer market is, being a player who is quite famous for having potential, but no one can quite describe why he has potential, never scoring for the clubs he plays at, and then suddenly being at Bournemouth for £20 million.
Well, to be fair, he's never played for a club that would actually play him, but it's his record at the under-20s World Cup or whatever it was that has gotten this valuation, even though I agree with you, it's an insane valuation. But I think him not scoring for the clubs he's played for is a bit harsh.
I think even as a substitute, you can score goals for Liverpool. Hopefully works out well for Bournemouth. Probably confirms that maybe Callum Wilson, if not this year, next year, is likely to be on the move. He's got a lot of interest, again, from the likes of Chelsea. Maybe they're doing Higuain for 6 months and then trying to get him Wilson at the end of the season. Actually, I think that would be quite a good move for them, even if it is going to be a ridiculous sum of money, however much it is.
Yeah, but if it's not them, I do wonder who else, because none of the other big teams need a striker, really. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, maybe like Everton. That's like the only other one I could see. But we'll have to see with that.
Other transfer news. One which I find utterly baffling is Moussa Dembélé leaving. Leaving Tottenham and moving out to China. I know people have said, oh, he's had injury problems and all of that lot. He, for the last few years, has been one of the best midfielders in the Premier League.
He's my favourite non-Brighton player.
Last year, you had Pochettino saying, you know, he loves him, he thinks he's genuinely one of the best players in the world, but now he's suddenly in China, which is where you go to retire, really. But I really can't understand that one. Even if you only had to have him on the bench, and let's face it, Tottenham are not signing players. Even having Dembélé off the bench, if he's not fully fit all the time, that's a weapon you need to have, as far as I'm concerned. If you're Tottenham and you're serious about competing for titles, I don't see how you can make that sale.
Well, especially with the midfield they've got already that's completely falling apart. Like, if their reliable sort of gritty central midfielder is meant to be Harry Winks, but the only thing that I can think of is that he started to tail off at the back half of last season and then hasn't played. It's not like he has been bad. It's like he hasn't played this year, which makes me think there might have been something might have happened. Like, his legs might have just completely gone or something like that. Because he is obviously was their best midfielder, as in proper midfielder, not like Ali, who pretty much plays as a second striker or anything like that. Like, he was always my favourite non-Brighton player, just because, and everyone at Tottenham always said he's the best player. So there must be something more to that. That can't be as stupid a decision as it looks, even though it looks really stupid. And the other big news, I don't know if you want to talk about, is Barcelona has spending 65 million on De Jong from Ajax, the CD sort of
yeah,
CDM.
Yeah, I've seen that one. That is just a pure Football Manager move.
Yeah, to be fair, apparently he's an absolute freak. I don't know that much about him because I don't watch a lot of the Dutch football, but, you know, reading a little bit about him, apparently he is like stupid. Like, he's insanely good.
Yeah, I know. I've heard a lot about him, but when it comes to players who are that young, my mind instantly just goes, potentially a total waste of money. One bad injury, and that can pretty much be a young player's career, never reaching those heights.
Yeah.
Or even just getting to him, the move. It could be the pressure he can't handle. He could suddenly turn into a nutter because of all the money he's got. How many times have you seen that exact kind of thing? And Barcelona, their track record recently with signings and with bringing through young players is abysmal. It's as bad as the big clubs in England.
Their squad is basically the old legends that Guardiola had, and then everyone else is just like thrown in there. Like, apparently Arthur's been quite good, and Rakitic was, I guess, for the other one, but like everybody else just seems thrown in there.
And it just looks like every single season they sign someone for 150 million, and next season they're thinking, shit, he wasn't Iniesta, maybe we should sell him.
Yeah.
Like, you constantly hear about Dembele and even Coutinho. Coutinho's been linked with moves to Man United, and you think those things don't hit the news just because some bored journalist has gone, what absolute nonsense can I make up today? Somebody's planted that and just gone, maybe we should see if anyone actually thinks this is viable. And it's usually when something like that is for selling club who are trying to see if it's even possible, if there's any kind of reception to it in their papers and all of those kinds of things. It's nutty at Barca. But of course, the biggest transfer of the season, and of the entire season, is we've sold Manolo Gagliardini to Sampdoria. We got about 10 million for him in the end, which is kind of good. It's a shame. He could have been amazing for us. He had some good times. And his goal against Swansea is more or less what kept us up. But yeah, that's a fair move. I hope we get another striker, though.
Do you want to talk about the actual dumbest transfer of the window, though, that you haven't mentioed?
I have not mentioned it. Come on.
Sami Nasri to West Ham.
Yeah, but Nasri was great 7 years ago.
Yeah, and he's a rotten egg. And, oh, God. I hate that signing. So West Ham, like over the summer, I was like, I thought they'd redeemed themselves. Like, they signed a few good players. And I was like, oh, well done, West Ham. And then they signed Sami Nasri. And it's like, it's not even like they need him is the bit that bothers me about that signing. It's like they've got their forward line is stacked. Their forward line and attacking midfielders is absolutely stacked with sick players. They don't need a player like that. They need like a gritty central midfielder. Like, I know they've got Rice, but they need another one.
Do you know who the journeyman player, defensive player, they should have signed? Diarra, fella. Diarra, the one who's been at every single club in the world.
But isn't he like 40?
Yeah, sign him.
didn't they have him at one point?
They might have done. Go and get him. They probably could have got him for free or something.
Lasana Diarra.
Yeah, or Lamina, whichever one it is.
Yeah, yeah. I think we were linked with him at one point. He's playing for PSG, apparently.
They could have got him.
Probably not playing for PSG. It's probably the... Yeah. I mean, they could have done that. I wouldn't have, but...
That's a proper football manager move right there. Signing Lasana Diarra.
Or are you talking about Alou Diarra, who already did play for West Ham?
No. Yeah, okay. All right, but we're going to move on from we'll move on from transfers. Man United, obviously, pretty big news at the moment. I think what have they won? Something like 7 games on the bounce. Yeah, and that's not just. I know when it was the first 3 or 4 games, and it's just playing everyone that they should beat anyway, and everyone was going a little bit mental about it. That was when I wasn't really on board. But it's 7 games now. At what point do you turn around and say the Solskjaer-Phelan combination? Let's just stick with it. Even if, like, here's my view. This is the most backwards move I think Man United have ever done. Purely because they've just completely relented and gone, keep Pogba and the other rat players happy. We're going to completely back out of any sense of value or ethics we have as a club, which Sir Alex Ferguson built into our club, and we're just going to be a red Chelsea. But who cares? It's working, right? Surely they should stick.
No. Go. I think it's still too early. I think it's still too early to say because I've watched a few of the games. Obviously, I watched the Brighton game. I watched the Tottenham game. And I think it was the first one they played, the Huddersfield game or something like that. And I still only think they're a tiny bit better. I think the only thing that's improved is their attacking. They still look so vulnerable. People will talk about it's only this team. And then they beat Spurs and everyone's like, oh, they're actually good. They should have got whipped in that game. De Gea made like 14 saves. They should have got absolutely whipped. If Tottenham could finish in that game, it would have been about 4-1.
I did see a really ironic article which was saying something about how United have solved some of their defensive frailties from that game.
It was
immediately preceded by De Gea had an amazing, one of the best games of his career, saving so many things. I was like, those two things do not go together.
He does that. And like, if it wasn't for him, they would have lost that game. And they are all savable shots. I think Tottenham's finishing was off that game. But even a great goalkeeper will probably spill one of those or go the wrong way or not be in the right position and make it easier for the striker or something like that. And against us, I didn't think they were astounding. I thought they were a bit better. They were much better than they were at the start of the year, to be fair, because we demolished them at the start of the year. But they were a bit better than they were last season when we went to Old Trafford, but not loads better. I didn't think they were. I thought overall on the pitch we had our chances. We got the ball a lot. We got in their faces. They didn't look totally comfortable. I wouldn't have described that as an astonishing coaching performance. I think what he's done is definitely given the positive atmosphere that's allowed Rashford, Martial, Lukaku, Pogba, not Lukaku because he hasn't played, but those kind of players to go out and play with some freedom and play well. But that doesn't last. Are we seriously expecting that vibe to last till the start of next year? I completely agree.
Yeah. That's the bit where I completely agree on, because here's my thinking. You can say, right, it's all going well at the moment. Tactically, it's maybe a little bit naive in some of the way it goes about it, but it's the feel-good factors brought back. Yeah, you maybe, if you go about it the game in that way, you're probably going to lose to City and Liverpool and those other teams that you go and play. It's probably not going to work out too well, and you'll slip points to the likes of West Ham or Everton occasionally because they actually can attack sometimes. But for me, the biggest problem is what you've essentially done as a club when you've made this appointment and you decide you stick with it. If they do, you have essentially capitulated. Yeah. You have said that we bow down completely to player power. And just like at Chelsea, where the second those players don't feel like it's going for them, or the manager's been a little bit mean, or whatever the hell the situation is, they just turn off, they stop, they switch off. It would be like, imagine that at a regular company, not a football club, imagine that at a company, is just any time people felt like everything wasn't perfect, they stopped working, or they deliberately worked at under 50% just so that nothing could ever really get done. The company would fire those people. They would fire them in a heartbeat because, you've got the grounds to go and do it, and because it's just completely unprofessional behaviour. And it's unprofessional, not just in a football sense, but in a general sense. So it's once you've done that, the second those players feel unhappy, and it is inevitable, as you say, that eventually they will feel unhappy, then they will just go and revolt again. Yeah. And you can never break that cycle once you start it. Not unless you get someone in who has got the permission to completely rehaul that club. Take all of those poisonous players and kick them out. And at United, they don't, because these players are signed, some of them, because they've got a big enough Twitter following, not because of what they do on the pitch.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously there's some of them do things on the pitch as well.
you know what I mean? It's commercial interests.
I do know what you mean. They have shown in the last 5 years that they have wrongly put too much of their focus into the commercial aspect. That's particularly Ed Woodward's fault, but they look like they're going to hire some kind of director of football to fix that, and depending on how that goes, they could be a world-class club again, because they have a bottomless pit of money to do it with. But it shows that they still need probably three defenders. I thought Dalot, whatever his name is, was good against us as well. So he could be their right back, or I know he was playing left back, but I think he could be a successful right back. But I still think they need two centre halves, at least one full back. If De Gea goes, they need a world class goalkeeper. I think they still need another central midfielder. Their forward line is probably okay, but there's still a lot of work to be done, and people talking about like Man United revival, like, oh, they're going to finish top four easy. It's like, they're only going to finish top four if somebody else fucks up big time. Like they're not going to earn their way into the top four by just winning a few games against us. Like, it's not going to happen. They are going to get beaten as soon as this sort of good atmosphere dies down. And
I think it's fragility really that's come out from all of this. It's shown how fragile they are. Mourinho's comments, he's not made too many comments. He's made some comments. One of the comments he made was that one player came up to him and requested that he doesn't get criticised in public, and not in public, on the training ground in front of the other players, because of his status in the team. Now, we don't know who that player was. He didn't name names. We can pretty well guess who it's going to be, because it can really only realistically be about two, possibly three players. It's Pogba or it's De Gea, really.
It's probably Pogba, because I don't think Mourinho ever out. It's going to be somebody that was outwardly spoken about, I think. I remember reading that article, and he talks about there were probably four players I criticised in public, and one of them came and said to me, "Don't do that." And I think it was probably Pogba. You're right, but you know.
It can't be someone like Luke Shaw, because they can't turn around and say, "Because of my status in the team." It's like, you are technically a junior player; you don't have any status. Shut up.
Yeah,
so it can't be anyone like that.
And there was, I can't remember who it was. I think it was probably Graham Souness or somebody like that, who I normally disagree with. But like, he made a point that it cannot just be that Solskjaer's come in and said to Pogba, "You can play with some freedom," and that's why he's got loads better. It's got to be something else. There's got to be something about Mourinho that stopped Pogba play, or something, to be honest, something about Pogba that stopped him playing well under Mourinho. Because Mourinho has gotten the best out of some of the world's best players. He's got the best out of Mesut Ozil. Mesut Ozil's never played better than he did when he was at Real Madrid. And
he's turned Jesse Lingard into genuinely one of the best attacking midfielders around.
Absolutely. I don't know how he got them second the year that he did. I don't think any other manager, he won a tournament with them. I still don't get that everyone still thinks it's Mourinho that it was the problem now. It obviously wasn't. Like, they're it's going to turn out, unless that they get some miracle manager who can really manage those egos properly, then I honestly think that they're still in a bit of a mess, unless they have a mental summer and sign a load of really good players and fix everything. But who knows?
For me, I just think this whole episode has shown the fragility that is inside that Man United squad.
Yeah, they're a glass house.
And it's highlighted how much there is, you know, little cliques within that club. You can see that on the football pitch. Just by the way, when the players are celebrating, some are always involved, some aren't. You know, there are little cliques there. You know that there's a hell of a lot of fragility mentally going on there. It's a bit like Sunderland. You know, with Sunderland every year, when they were trying to get relegated from the Premier League but never quite accomplishing it, when they'd get a new manager and every time, and they'd feel like, great, yeah, we can really go out there and play football, and then they'd lose one game and they'd hate themselves until that manager got sacked. And then they do it all over again. It's Sunderland syndrome, but Man United. And it's a cycle. You can't ever break that, because you just end up in that constant cycle. I don't think they solve it by going out and signing some great players, because you do that, you're just reinforcing the problem. Yeah. You're reinforcing player power. You're reinforcing cliques and all of that kind of thing. And that is what kills a club. You look at those clubs that are doing genuinely well. They're not doing that. They don't have that in that team. Not even slightly. It's only the clubs that have those real yo-yo times. And that's why I made that comparison to Chelsea, because it is such a similar situation.
Yeah, and I would love to know that if you seriously sat down with Michael Carrick and said, how many of these current players would you want in your, like, dream Man United teams back with Ferguson? How many of them would you have? And I tell you what, I don't think it's that many. Like, obviously he would say the professional answer, be like, oh well, I don't have any of the players or whatever, but like, because when Ronaldo joined United back when in that dream team, what everyone said is that he basically had the attitude that the rest of the players seem to have now, and they all kicked it out of him, and then he became the best player in the world. And it seems like there's nobody there to kick it out of him. Like, what's gonna happen? Pogba does something stupid in training and Ashley Young gets at his throat. Like, it's not gonna happen. Like, it's not. No. When they had Scholes gigs, even Rooney apparently used to get at him a bit and all that kind of stuff. Like, any of them, Vidic, Ferdinand, they were all like leaders. I don't see a single leader in that United team. I don't think Pogba's a particularly good leader. Like, he's probably some sort of good, I don't want to say idol, that's the wrong word.
He's a fashion general. He's a general who looks good in public. But at the same time, the general is not the one you want on the battlefield.
Exactly. But how many of them, as a young player, Zlatan genuinely looked like he was a leader. I honestly think he played a big part in it last year to get them to finish second.
I've got to say, I don't buy this current thing people are saying when they go, oh, it's this new crop, it's this new generation of younger players. They can't take the criticism. All of this crap and blah, 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 blah. I'm sorry, I don't buy that for a second. That's a mentality that you generate. You do that by signing all the same exact type of players who have got that mental fragility. Are you telling me that, what's his name, Morrison at Cardiff? Are you telling me he's one of those types of players? Because he's from the same generation as the rest of them. And you know, at the same time, even if he was playing for United and he was rubbish, he'd still kick the ever-living shit out of Paul Pogba.
Do people think Jadon Sancho, who decided to, on his own volition, go to another foreign country that he's never been to before in his life where he doesn't speak the language, do people really think he's soft? Like, is that a thing that modern players are a bit like this? It's like, no, they've probably existed always. It's just they maybe didn't make it to the top. And, the difference is
Man United, they have signed a lot of those players compared to what they used to do before, which is sign those players who, if they weren't playing football, would probably have been shooting people in Afghanistan.
Exactly. And like a few of them probably are. Like, I imagine Lukaku is fairly tough because he made a lot of sensible decisions about leaving Chelsea to go to play at small clubs. I say small clubs like West Brom and Everton. Everton, not a small club, but West Brom. Relatively are. Shouldn't say that too soon though, because we got them in the cup on Saturday, and if I lose, it's going to look awful. But all of that kind of stuff. Like a few of them, like Rashford. Like I still think the jury's out on him. I still think he's a form player. I don't think he's proven over the course of 25 games that he's good. I think he's proven.
Yeah, it's whether or not he gets that Harry Kane season of putting it together on a proper run, not scoring a goal every single game, but learning how to score a goal every other game.
Yeah, and he was good against us. I will admit that. He was absolutely amazing against us. Man of the match by miles. But he does do that. He had an incredible game against Liverpool last year where he was man of the match by miles and then did nothing for another 25 games or whatever. And people would say, he didn't really play as a striker. It's like, I don't really believe in that. I don't really buy into that. Like, he'd look good, whatever happened. So,
do you know who strikes me as genuinely having some mental strength in that United squad? And it's almost like when you'd... It's almost the one you'd always assume didn't have it.
De Gea. Lingard.
On the one hand, you're talking about modern generational players. And yeah, this is a guy who's sending out tweets and Snapchats and Instagrams. And as you can tell from the way I'm talking about it, even I don't do that.
Yeah.
Doing all of that stuff, being really active on social media. So you'd think, right, he's the modern player. Yeah, he always responds to criticism in the right way. On the pitch, he's never looking like... It's never like, we've conceded, heads down, I'm going to stop playing. It's, I'm going to charge forward and try and get that goal.
Scores some incredibly pivotal goals. Yeah. Scores a lot in drawing games.
And it's one of those things that it constantly reinforces me. Yes, some of the players' attitudes to what they do socially, like they're playing Fortnite nowadays rather than deciding that they're going to go and kick the shit out of each other even more on the training ground or whatever it is. Yeah, these things have changed, but the core mentality of the actual football player, that is as much what the player and what the club breeds into them. And the thing I've always tend to notice is the players who have come through United do seem to have a little bit more mentally than the ones they're bringing in. So the like Rashford, I think, has got a bit of something about him in terms of his mental fortitude. Yeah, he can't put it together in terms of a run of games, but he has had to weather a lot of crap.
Yeah.
And in terms of the criticism, in terms of being played out of position, and the fact that he's still there and still putting it together, I think that shows quite a lot.
And also the opposite of that, of the ego boost of everyone talking about how you're a potential Ballon d'Or winner in 3 or 4 years. It's an interesting one that you bring up Jesse Lingard, because I absolutely agree with you that's the case. But it's interesting that when he was at Brighton, because he did a loan spell with us and we all loved him, we all knew he was a great player. I was maybe a little surprised when he did start playing for United, because I thought the gap between us finishing in the playoffs in the Championship and Man United was quite big, but it's narrowed since then. But it's interesting because he did an interview before one of the games talking about how he used to have to take anxiety pills before a match, because he used to get really, really anxious before matches. And it sounds like he's always had the ability. Like, he used to score, I remember when he scored 4 goals on his debut for Birmingham, I remember him running the show against some of the grittiest, hard tacklingest players in the Championship. So he's always had that about him, but it sounds like it's been worked out of him by being able to play for Man United and that kind of thing. So I agree completely that out of all the outfield players since Ferguson left, I think De Gea is the only one who's come off completely unscathed. He is the best in the world for me in his position. But Lingard is the one that's come out completely clean out of all of it. Like, he has consistently proved that he's good enough. Consistently been in the team under several managers. Well, only really Van Gaal and Mourinho, and I guess Solskjaer if you count him. But and he's consistently performed. So I think I completely agree that Lingard deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, but as I said, I think United do need to sort some things out if they don't want to go the way of Chelsea. At the end of the day, United have always had that thing of being the biggest club in the world, not just the Premier League. And you're not the biggest club in the world if you only win the Premier League once every 4 years and the rest of the time you're barely competing for the Europa League.
Yeah.
But moving on to Chelsea, is Sarri ball going in decline? Is Sarri falling out of favour at Chelsea? It seems like a lot of the positive energy, a lot of the positive mentality from Chelsea fans, from general football fans liking the way it's all going, it's kind of dissipated, and now it's into the whole raised eyebrow, is this really as good as we thought it was?
Say that word again. Say that word. Dissipated. I think it's dissipated.
Well, I'm adding an entire syllable. Dissipated. adding a syllable in there.
Also, talking about Chelsea, right now, 7 minutes ago, Higuain has officially completed his loan move.
And by that, viewers, you can tell exactly when we recorded this.
Absolutely, yeah.
But no, do you think it's all sort of falling a little bit by the wayside for Chelsea?
Well, it's really interesting because I try and look back 3 or 4 months ago when everyone was saying it all happened quicker than everyone expected. So I almost think it's possible that it's happening in reverse, where they picked up the Sarri ball a bit quicker than everyone thought. And then they've started to deteriorate rather than they were going to start slow and get better. So it's possible that it's like, obviously it doesn't really make sense that it would happen the other way around. But when you think about it, they haven't had a goal scorer, really. They've relied on Hazard way too much. Jorginho has been in and out of form despite starting the season really well. I still think they haven't quite worked out how they want their defence to be. There is still little problems in there that maybe people didn't see. The whole Kante not playing in his right position thing. There is still problems within the squad. But then the big problem was Sarri coming out and saying that the Chelsea players are hard to motivate, which isn't a new idea. That isn't a new thing said. That's been said by Mourinho, by Conte, and now by Sarri.
It's nothing new. And I think the way I can see it is I look at where Chelsea are on the table. They're fourth in the table, 47 points, Tottenham above them on 51, Arsenal below them on 44. Now, if I had said at the start of the season where I think Chelsea would be, and we say the top two are still where they are on 60 points and 56 points respectively, I'd have said Chelsea maybe around 54, 53 points. So we're only really looking at about two games worth of difference, two games that could have swung the other way around. But it's not really to do with that, because results-wise, they're still top four, they're still doing okay, and they could easily build on that next year. It's that there's some problem with the key players, Jorginho being halfway there, and him probably being the most instrumental player in that tactic.
Yeah, 100%.
Kante being possibly the world's best defensive midfielder, not playing in defensive midfield. When something like that happens, it always kind of alienates the fans a little bit. Still not solving the striking problem. Hazard yo-yoing between I can stay here for my entire life, but I also want to move to Real Madrid, and knowing that that can very easily happen by the end of the year. When you start putting all these things together, and again with Sarri turning around and saying it's a hard group of players to motivate, that's when the fans start to say, well, is anything really any different? Like, yeah, we've changed the way we play a little bit and we're getting some better results than what we were getting before, but has it actually changed, or are we just in another cycle with another manager where it will end within a year and a half and then we get another Sarri in a slightly different Sarri called Barry because it can't end with a Y, possibly that would be used in English,
and he's Scottish instead of Italian. And it's one of those things that the whole we've changed to be playing Sarri ball and playing attacking football thing, that is only really true when it works, and it hasn't worked the last few games. It's not like they've been good and lost. It's they've been bad and lost. They've been they have been not great in a lot of the games I've watched them. There was a worry at the start of the year that a lot of the games they were playing, it looked like Hazard was carrying them through it, playing as well as he was. And they were playing some nice football on the side, but so were Arsenal. I still have complete faith in Sarri. I still think he's exactly the right person to go for them. And it's seemingly so to Chelsea, because from what I understand, that Chelsea typically make the signings from the board position. The managers have very little influence, but it sounds like Sarri said, I want Higuain, and they weren't too keen. And they decided we'll go with Sarri and get Higuain. And maybe that is it. Maybe all they've needed is just to finish a few chances, but there are definitely problems there that Sarri needs to solve. it might mean selling Hazard in the summer and building a better squad around him, because he's gone from saying he is the best player in the world, which he literally said 3 or 4 weeks into the season, to saying he's hard to motivate and everyone's hard to motivate. So it's a little bit messy. I don't think it's a disaster, but it is messy at the moment at Chelsea.
Arsenal, I want to talk a little bit about them and Unai Emery. Is it actually any better than when it was with Wenger? And I'm basing this not on, oh, the play style's maybe a little bit better than what we wanted and everything's a little bit happier because Wenger is not here. Let's ignore that crap. Results, end of this season, I don't think they're going to finish higher than fourth, and I don't think they're going to finish fourth. I still think Chelsea will finish fourth. They're probably going to finish fifth or sixth, depending on how well they manage to manage the end of the season and how well Man United keep on this little run they're going on. And of course, the whole point of bringing Unai Emery in and getting rid of Wenger is to say we are no longer happy being a club finishing fifth and sixth and outside of the Champions League. We want to be a Champions League club again. I think fine. And you can say, right, we'll give them a year where it's not going to happen. But then wasn't the whole reason why they actually wanted to get rid of Wenger was because they were always finishing fourth and weren't competing for the title. Have they actually made any significant improvements? Because all I can see is they've got Wenger's players playing a little bit better, not Unai Emery players. They're playing actually a broadly similar style to how they were before. I mean, we were talking how they were before 5 years ago. Again, still during the Wenger years.
Well,
and I don't really see him being any more likely to compete in the next few years either. I see it far more realistic that Unai Emery's gone within 3 years.
I think the one big difference between Emery and Wenger is Emery demonstrates that he has a very clear plan B if things aren't working. Like whereas Wenger used to pretty much go with the "we'll pass it, we'll walk it in" is the joke, and that he would go with that pretty much 100% of the time, even if it wasn't working in the match. Whereas Emery has shown literally, like, almost to his detriment at times, that he makes incredible substitutions at halftime and things like that. And, like, there was a stat, I don't know if it's still true, but about 20 games into the season or something, they weren't leading a game at halftime. And you can see that as one of two things, which is either there is something seriously wrong, which there is, or there is something he's seriously clever, which I also think he is. So, like, the thing is with Arsenal is it probably we won't be in a position to really talk about how they're doing, maybe even till the end of the year, and even that might be too early because they haven't had a really good chance to rebuild the squad. I still think they need two centre backs. Like, they've signed Torreira, he's great. Their front line is filth. I think maybe they need a winger, but they haven't been playing one. But they need a winger. Going to get rid of Ramsey. I think they should. I think they should have got rid of him a year ago. There's still squad problems there, and it would take time for Emery to build it the same way it took time for Klopp and Guardiola to build theirs. So, and I think it's possible there will be a hole opening in the top four, which it's better now to get into the top four than it was when Wenger was there pretty much over the last decade, because it's more competitive. And I think there will be a hole in the top four if Pochettino leaves Tottenham. So there will be a spot for them to claim. And I think they have looked better under Emery than they were under Wenger. They seem to be a little bit more consistent. They've dropped off a little bit in the last few weeks. Like, how good they were against Chelsea, they would never do that under Wenger. They would have never done that in the last 3 or 4 years. They absolutely dominate them.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a clear victory. But they have managed to maintain the essential Arsene Wenger Arsenal thing of going into December and then capitulating completely. Because everyone remembers they were unbeaten right up until they played Ralph Hasenhüttl's Southampton, lost valiantly 3-2, and they've lost 5 games since. It's all gone a little bit wrong in December, January time, so they haven't quite gotten rid of that one. For me, I suppose the only question is, if it just carries on like this for the next few years, at what point do we have to say, a bit like Ferguson United, maybe it wasn't all the manager. Maybe there are some bigger changes that need to be happening here.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Wenger will turn around and say, actually, we were maybe a bit harsh on him in the end.
There undoubtedly is more going on than just the manager. And we'll see over the next couple of years as to whether the board have got that message as well. But they seem to get it in the summer with the signings of Torreira, because that was a really smart signing. That was like a really good signing. And although I don't think it's quite worked out because I don't particularly rate him, I thought Socrates may have been like sort of a similar kind of signing at the time, sort of like clever 20, 30 million kind of player. But if the truth is they are going to fall behind if they don't start spending £60 million on players. It's a real sad truth that that's what the game's got to. But you don't get into the top six. Same with Tottenham. Tottenham have happened to luck themselves upon a handful of world-class players for very little money, like Kane, Ali, Eriksen. They've happened to luck upon all of them. It's not luck. That's not fair for me to call it luck. But
no, it is a little bit of luck. It's a bit like with Southampton about 2 or 3 years ago. We had all these great players together. If we had kept everyone together just by pure chance and making those good signings, we were almost cracking Champions League.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it all kind of completely imploded. And then the next few signings we made were rubbish. It is a little bit of luck. There's so many players get signed by clubs nowadays. You can't say it's all just pure scouting managerial genius when you get the good ones, because you can't forget the sheer mass of terrible ones all the same.
Exactly.
They all count equally. So you've got to say at some point some of it was a bit of luck.
And young player transfer fees inflate so quickly. Like, what did they buy Alderweireld from Atletico? 20 million? Something like that? He'd be worth
it. Something like that, but I'm pretty sure he had a release clause.
Yeah. Well, was he playing? He was playing as well, if not better, than at Southampton. He never signed for you, did he? He was a loan player, wasn't he?
No, we almost got him. We almost got him until Tottenham last minute put a bid in.
But if you think about how Van Dijk was playing, I don't know if this is true, but probably as well, if not slightly better, than Alderweireld. And Van Dijk goes for 75 million. He was the same age as he was with you. He would now be inferior, £60 million player.
And I would say Alderweireld was a much better player for us than Van Dijk. Van Dijk turned up in certain games. Alderweireld was consistent for us.
Yeah,
every single game he was reliable.
Yeah, and I still love Alderweireld, but he's obviously on the lower end of 30. But and going back to what top we were with Tottenham, like with Arsenal potentially being able to move into their place, they're only going to do it if they build their squad with potentially 50, 60 million pound players. And I think Torreira can maybe be classed as one. Aubameyang is one now, but won't be in 2 years. He's too old. Nobody will buy him for 60 million now. Lacazette, maybe. Ozil doesn't even look like he's going to get in the team. Ramsey is going. None of the defenders are very good. Not even Hector Bellerin.
How dare you insult Rob Holding?
Rob Holding is a good player, but he's probably not a top six.
He's Arsenal's Phil Jones.
I've never seen an Arsenal player wearing an Everton shirt the way Rob Holding is eventually going to be.
It's going to be Everton and Middlesbrough.
Well, no, Everton and West Ham. West Ham is the classic. They'll sign just, oh, he played for the top six. He must be good. Sometimes I look at Mustafi and wonder how he's a professional footballer as a centre back, because he is short and he won a World Cup. But like,
he's a slightly better Wesley Hurt, in which you're sort of looking at him and going, right, when's the next mistake going to happen?
Can't
wait for this. It's not, oh, he's probably going to make a good tackle here. It's, oh God, it's all going to go wrong any second now. Do not give. I trust genuinely that we passed the ball to our goalkeeper more. We passed to Wesley Hurt. And I think there's quite a lot of Arsenal fans who must feel the same about Mustafi.
Yeah. And we'll have to wait and see. I think Arsenal have the chance to be a decent team again, but it is frustrating that the expectation was when Wenger was sacked that they'd compete for the title, essentially. And they were so far away from that, so far away that it was unrealistic. And I think all people really want to see is progress on and off the pitch in some sense, not the same. And it doesn't feel like it's the same. So I think that all in all, they can finish fifth. I will think, to be fair, it will be a bit different if they finish behind United. And I know they're equal on points at the moment, but if they ended up finishing behind United, which I don't think they will, I think they'll probably end up finishing fifth by a few points, then I think they will have be considered to have had a good season. Which is a bit hypocritical when United will consider to have a really bad season if they finish fifth. So,
yeah. But, well, it all goes back a little bit to what we said at the start of the show. If you want to win the Premier League, you have to pay enough to win it. And currently Arsenal and Tottenham are not doing that. Thank you very much for joining us on this week's version of the V2 Football Podcast. Please check out some of our other stuff. Check out all of the other stuff coming out of V2. We've got wrestling podcasts, we've had F1 podcasts, 72 shows. So please check out some of the other stuff we're doing too. Thank you very much for joining me this week, and we'll see you all later. Goodbye.
See ya.